you very much, Tudor. Thank you so much for the welcome and for all of you for coming on your lunch hour as well. It's great to see people here. We have had some great hustings all around the country, lots of debates and meetings. And although, you know, look, we have robust debate and there are a whole series of areas that we disagree on that I'll talk a bit more about, but also the values that we share. And the common values, I think, that unite our entire Labour Party and movement are so important. And a lot of our discussions actually have been very friendly. I don't think this is about personalities. I think this is about different ideas about the way forward. In fact, some people have actually accused us of having been too friendly in some of the and the hustings. I know you'll have seen, many of you, the picture of the four of us standing together in that keeps being used in a lot of the media, of the four of us standing there grinning together, which I think it was the Nuneaton hustings that we came out of. And I heard someone on the phone as we were walking out, and it was a woman. It was like she was talking to her daughter, and it was something along the lines of, no, it was really good. So there was a blonde one, and a dark one, and a bearded one, and another one. And you sort of thought, oh my God, they think we're an ABBA tribute band. But actually, look, this has been an important debate. But for all of the good meetings and the good debates that we've had, being really honest, I wish I wasn't here in these circumstances today, because I wish we'd won. And I wish I'd been here as Labour's Home Secretary, talking to you about what we were going to do to get neighbourhood police back on the street, to have a new piece of legislation with violence against women and girls, that we would be for the first time setting up a national refuge fund, higher standards, compulsory sex and relationship education, the sorts of things that we need to do to deal with the fact that two women a week are still killed by a partner or an ex. I wish that I'd been here talking about how a Labour government was going to work not just with Tudor and with Claire Moody, who I think is here as well, but with Luke and Alison, who would have been our two fantastic Plymouth MPs, and the things that we could have all done together to change Britain for so many people who live in Plymouth who depend on a Labour government. But we can't do any of that because we lost. And what struck me, what really brought it home to me, was actually my constituency in Castleford, where we'd actually was in the neighbouring town Normanton. We were been door knocking for, and on polling day itself, to get people to go out to vote. And a woman who came up to me during the, while we were knocking, to say to ask me for help, because she had bedroom tax arrears of over £1,000, and she was in tears when she was talking to me. And I said, look, of course I would help, but please go and vote today. And she did. She voted for Labour. She voted for all of us. But because we lost, her arrears are still in place, and that bedroom tax is still in place as well. And I feel like we let her down. We cannot do that again. We owe it to so many people across the country to stand up for them. We owe it to so many people across the country who need a Labour government to be fighting for them, to show how we can be in the Labour movement true to our values, strong enough to take the Tories on, and also strong enough to reach out and to win so that we can deliver for them as well. And let's just say, I think there's been a bit of assumption, you know, when you read some of the articles in the papers or see the stuff on the telly, that people think somehow this leadership election is all sewn up, that somehow we should believe what we've seen in the polls, despite the fact that I think many of us on May the 8th decided we would never ever believe the polls again, that we should somehow believe what the bookies say. Because, well, does Paddy Power have a hotline to the hearts of Labour Party members across the country? I don't think so. And actually, there is lots to argue about, to play for, to campaign for, and that is what I'm doing now. That is why I'm here, because I want to fight for every vote and campaign for every vote, because I believe there is so much at stake. I think this is no time for hubris among those who think they are winning, and no time for defeatism among those who think they aren't. Quite the opposite. I think we've got to be engaged in that robust debate about the future of our party, because the fight for our party is now. This is when it counts. The decision we will make this summer will determine our chance of winning the next election, or whether we just leave the pitch, just rip up our chances and leave the Tories, a narrow Tory elite, in charge of our country for another 5 years. Five-year-olds today growing up in Britain have already spent 5 years under a Tory government. I don't want them to spend their whole childhood under a Tory government. And that's why I'm here. That's why I'm campaigning. And I told Tor to talk about the three things, the values that I think we need to have, the ideas, the radical vision for the future we've got to have, but also how we take the Tories on, how we stand up to them, don't swallow their myths, and how we make sure we win for the future so we can do the things that we believe in and that we've always stood up for. My values come from, I grew up in the, we travelled around. My family are from the coal fields and the industrial towns of the north, but we moved around with my dad's job a lot. And so I'm the granddaughter of a miner, daughter of a trade unionist, and actually went to a comprehensive in Hampshire. But I learned early that sense of solidarity, that we stand together and we're stronger when we do so than when we leave people to sink or swim alone. Drew too on that tradition of radical equality in the Labour Party that comes from the suffrage movement, from the idea of equal, deep equality of respect for every single human being, of never tolerating poverty or prejudice that hold people back. It's why one of the first campaigns I was involved in was in Section 28, campaigning against Section 28 in the 1980s, and why I was so proud to lead Labour's campaign for equal marriage in recent years as well. But those things make me Labour. I mean that I hate what the Tories are doing to Britain. I hate the fact that half the world's wealth is concentrated in just 1% of the population. I hate the fact that we're seeing widening inequalities and that still today you have working families who end up having to go to a food bank to put a hot meal on the table. I think that's wrong, and I think we, the Labour movement, have to stand up against it. But that means to start by not swallowing the Tories' myths. And let's be really clear where that starts, because, look, it wasn't the deficit that caused the financial crisis. It was the financial crisis that caused the deficit. And it wasn't too many teachers, too many doctors, too many nurses or too many sure starts that caused Lehman Brothers Bank in New York to crash. And we should never let anyone get away with saying it. And you know what, I think we've got to be confident about that. And this has been one of the disagreements that Andy and I have had as part of the campaign, because I don't think we should apologise for Labour's public spending on schools and hospitals and sure starts. I think we should be proud of the investment that we made in the health service, proud of the things like the sure starts that we brought in, that I was responsible for rolling out across the country, and be confident about our values and not swallow the Tory myths. We should too be confident enough to stand up against George Osborne's 40% cuts to the public services. That's what he wants to do now. So children and local councils already had to cope with a series of different cuts and have hit public services and had to take all kinds of innovative responses, and rightly so, in order to respond. But 40% further now, that goes way beyond what you need to do to bring the deficit down. Way beyond. It's not about good economics. It's actually about an ideology of austerity, because they don't believe in the public services at all. So we can have the confidence to say that we will oppose that 40% ideology of austerity and also have a sensible economic policy that brings the deficit down but that gets the economy growing. And here's where I disagree with Jeremy. I don't think the way to do that is just to print money that we haven't got in order to pay for things. Because that, in the end, is dodgy economics. We'll end up falling apart, we'll end up pushing inflation up, and we'll actually make families across Britain worse off. So I think we can be both radical and credible. That is what we have to do. So look, there are so many ways in which we need to take the Tories on. Frankly, it also includes being strong enough to take on David Cameron in Parliament, which I would relish. Being strong enough to fight them on a series of things, the damage that they are doing to our country in so many ways. And that includes on the welfare reform bill. And let's be honest, that was a mess. We actually had two votes on the welfare reform bill. The first vote was a vote against the welfare reform bill, and rightly so. It would have blocked it completely, because it does include getting rid of the child poverty targets. It does include what I call the children tax, this idea that somehow if you've got three kids, you're going to end up worse off in work, which I don't think is right. But that first vote got lost in the messy compromise over the second vote, where we abstained as an attempt to try and keep the parliamentary Labour Party together because there was disagreement. And it didn't work. It was a messy compromise. And look, we should just keep it simple for the future. If the bill comes back to Parliament, if I'm elected leader, we will oppose that bill. If it doesn't have all the changes we need, pure and simple, we oppose it. I think that's the right thing to do. We also, I think, though, have to have our own ideas for the future, our own vision of the way we want to change Britain. For me, I just think, look, we have not got enough good jobs in Britain. You know, across Plymouth, there are some jobs that, you know, the high-skilled jobs that we need to defend and we need to support. But for too many of our young people, actually, the only jobs they're able to apply for will be low-skilled jobs. Our economy is just getting too dependent on cheap labour. What are we going to do to get the good jobs for the future for all of our kids to have a chance to get? I think we should be doubling our national investment in science. If we did that, Germany's done that, other countries have done that. If we did that, we'd have 2 million more high-tech manufacturing jobs for the future. So, and then back it up by a vocational revolution so we stop that British snobbery which says that academic qualifications are one thing, vocational education is second class, that is letting our children down. It's also holding our economy back. We can have a vision of Britain which leads in the digital revolution, just as we did in the industrial revolution. A positive view, not just to the kind of jobs we want, but also change the way the economy works. I talk about it as being a feminist approach to the economy, where we say it's not just about roads and rail infrastructure. Actually, we need childcare. Helps all parents. We need free universal childcare like they've done in Scandinavia. Extend Sure Start so we properly support families. Stop families being stretched and strained to fit round work. Change work to fit round families. So we support a stronger future for all of us. And as part of that, let's also value some of the services that do the most to protect those who are most frail, those who are most vulnerable, and yet too often are seen as a Cinderella service, seen as a service that is just left behind. And that's why I think we've got to have a full living wage, not just George Osborne's attempt to do so. Not just, it's good that he's increased the minimum wage, we campaigned for it, but let's campaign for a full living wage. And let's start by closing the tax loopholes on euro bonds and the hedge funds and put that money into a full living wage for the 1.4 million people who work in social care. Let's start valuing social care, such an important service for our future. So many different things we could do. We could talk about house building. We could talk about kinds of different ideas for the future. But with all of that, we're going to have to be credible and we're going to have to be able to reach out in order to win, otherwise it won't work. So I think being radical about extending Sure Start actually will do us more than simply talking about spending billions of pounds transferring the control of some industries from one group in a power company to another group in Whitehall. Actually, we can be far more radical by extending Sure Start instead. I think there is so much more we can do to be radical about being internationalist and part of Europe. Not pulling out of Europe, not pulling out of NATO, not pulling out of those international alliances that we need to make anything change in the world, in the uncertain world that we're part of. And we've got to reach out and win as well. I was born in Scotland, brought up in England, family from the north, went to school in the south. I love the diversity of our country, but I wanted to make us stronger and not something that leaves us behind. We were too narrow at the election. We lost votes to UKIP, to the Tories, to the SNP. But if we simply veer our narrow party a bit to the left or a bit to the right, actually that won't work. And also if we simply divide our party, that won't work either. And I have been troubled by the way in which our party seems to be fracturing, when actually I think we have so many common values that we share. I've been troubled too by some of the reports that we've seen. We had a Unite activist in South London saying that if Jeremy won, that should be the start of a process to deselect hardworking councillors and MPs who had not supported Jeremy. Do you know, I think that is wrong. Mm. And I do not think we should get into a sectarian battle when we should be looking outwards at the country and how we, the Labour Party, stand up for people in the country. So I have called on Jeremy and his campaign to condemn that approach and to distance themselves from that approach, because we, the Labour Party, that very core value that we have about being stronger when we stand together than when we leave people to sink or swim alone. That applies to our party, but far more importantly, it applies for our country. The way in which we need to reach out and support people so that we can change the country. It's not good enough just to be angry at the world. We're the Labour Party, we need to change the world. I'm only standing here because for 100 years, the Labour Party's campaigned for women's equality. And I'm only standing here because I've had so many more chances than my mum and my grandma because of the campaigns that Labour has run. I worry, though, about my daughters and the way in which the Tories have been turning the clock back, the way in which David Cameron has hit women harder than men, even though they still earn less and own less than men. We know David Cameron has a woman problem. So let's give him an even bigger one by electing our first woman leader and woman Prime Minister as well. Thank you very much.
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed, Yvette. Now, we've got time for questions and answers. Could the questioners please, could you give your name clearly? And if you want to give yourselves a geographical location as well, so we know where you're literally coming from. So I'll try and take them in groups of three if I can. Is that all right?
Yeah,
right,
great,
right,
thank
one
you.
At a time. And there's you, and there's you. I'll work around the room. Okay, you Big. First.
David Evans, I'm a Plymouthian, which is south of Swindon. I'm rather nervous about asking you this, Yvette, because I'm a man. So, although I'm in touch with my feminine side, what will you, as leader and Prime Minister, do for infrastructure, transport links to Plymouth? Because it all the big jobs, the firms, etc., seem to stop at Exeter or Bristol and along that line. You know, we're stuck down here, along with Cornwall, a long way away from. It seems a long way away from the centre of things. And being in Plymouth, my father was a dockyardy, is still a big employer here. So how would you help protect Devonport Royal Base and the defence?
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Yvette. Brendan Parkinson, St Austell and Newquay. You've already got my vote, so you don't need to win me over. I don't want you saying things just to make me happy. I am interested in how you feel about broadening out the Labour appeal into the areas that I represent, because I think we've been sorely neglected in the past. I'm also interested in how you view this momentum that seems to have been created through the campaign so far, and how you're likely to respond to that as leader.
Hello, I'm Lucy Knight from Plymouth. I'm actually asking on behalf of my younger brother, and he wants to know how teenagers, and particularly people who can't yet vote, can get involved with politics, particularly Labour politics.
Okay, great questions. So first of all, the infrastructure and transport, it's incredibly important, and I think it reflects, there's a wider thing. Look, Labour did well in the big cities, actually, but we lost in smaller cities, in towns, in coastal areas in particular, in further away areas, and also in rural areas as well. And I think there is a sense of, in some ways, some of the biggest, the core cities being the strongest areas that have seen economic growth, but actually a lot of other areas still being left behind, and us not having the balanced economic recovery we need, we've got to have much more devolution of decision-making. So you do need more transport investment and infrastructure in the southwest, but also I think the power to make those decisions here in the southwest, rather than them just being taken in Whitehall, rather than the decisions and investment being taken and then actually cancelled in Whitehall as well. Because if you look at other parts of the country, Midland Main Line and the Transpennine Line, which were promised by David Cameron before the election, in fact he had some fantastic press releases of him standing next to these great projects that they were all campaigning for, as soon as the election's over, cancelled by Whitehall. And that's why I think this has got to involve power being devolved, power in the hands of the many, not the few, and also this not have this idea that somehow you only get devolution if you have a mayor.
Mm-hmm.
because it's just ridiculous to say to areas, well, we'll have localism, but you can't decide what your form of government is. Local communities have got to decide whether they want a mayor, whether they don't. In terms of the dockyards and the defence support and so on, look hugely important, a really important part of our national industry, as well as being part of our national security, and needs to continue as well. And I know Vernon Coker, who's the chair of my team, I know has taken very seriously all the work in Plymouth and so on as well. And that needs to be part of our future, both as an economy as well as part of our national defence too. Brent's question about how do you broaden then our appeal? I mean, I think we were too narrow. I think anybody who believes in a stronger economy and a fairer, less divided Britain should feel like Labour is their home, should feel like we want them to be part of what we do, that who we are and how we reach out. I had somebody who said to me, worked in business, and said that she felt that at the time of the election, she said, you broke my heart at the election. I felt like you pushed me away. I felt like you didn't want my vote. And I felt my staff felt you didn't want our votes as well. And she also says, she said, well, we want a higher minimum wage because it stops us being undercut. We think you should increase the minimum wage. So somebody in those circumstances, she came from a Labour family. Of course, we want her to carry on voting Labour and not to feel like anybody is pushed away. So I think we can reach out. If you've got that vision, both of the kinds of jobs we want, everybody should want that, the kinds of childcare that we want. But the Tories won't deliver that because the Tories believe in laissez-faire. They believe in shrinking the state, in not supporting the economy, in not supporting families. They don't stand up for any of those things. We, the Labour Party, do. And I think we can reach out with that. Lucy, your question then about how teenagers can get involved. I think we've got to do far more as a party to involve young people, because it is part of not just us standing up for young people, but us helping young people stand up for themselves. The reason the Tories have been able to hit young people so much harder is because they think they can take young people for granted because young people won't vote. And, you know, that's something we therefore, this is part of our fight against injustice, that we should be therefore standing up for the younger generation who have had such, whether it's been what's happened with tuition fees, whether it's been what's happened with the MA, what's happened with all sorts of changes to benefits, whether it's happened to jobs, the fact that the minimum wage has fallen so much further behind the national minimum wage as well. So I think part of that's got to be votes for 16 and 17-year-olds. Part of it's got to involve stronger citizenship education at school, so that young people can actually find out the crucial information before they get to vote as well. And it's got to be about a much more open, inclusive party that says to young people, instead of us saying in the shadow cabinet or in Brewer's Green, we decide what you're going to campaign on, go off and campaign on it, quite the opposite. Young people need to decide what actually would be the best youth campaigns be, and we should be backing them rather than the other way around. So starting with Brian's question about Hillary Clinton, I think... thank goodness we don't have to deal with some of the strange shock jocks and the Fox News and so on debates that you get in the States. I think it's probably hard for anybody to give advice to the Americans there. But I did have, because I worked briefly on the Clinton campaign for Bill Clinton in 1992. And I had as part of it this really good badge which said, I'm backing Hillary's husband, which was part of the campaign at the time. You do have to be robust enough in any of these jobs to be able to cope with whatever media onslaught you get. We have a robust press, and it's a good thing that we do, but equally we also know some of that can get out of control. One of the things, though, I think we have been, that is changing now in terms of any of that debate with the media, is that it's become democratised now. Because so many of us now are talking on Facebook or on Twitter or on different ways, that what used to be about the press releases just put out by a central party or candidate and the views about a small number of newspapers is now way gone. It's now a much more open debate. And that has both huge strengths. It can also have problems when some of the debate can get too vitriolic and too divisive. But it also is, because it's democratised, I think it's therefore a responsibility from every one of us, you know, from all of us, and the ability for us to be part of that debate through all kinds of different ways of communicating too. Two really important questions about the National Health Service. And it is interesting as well, we should never take for granted the National Health Service we have. When I was working on the Clinton campaign, one of the things I ended up doing every so often was answering calls from people who are worried about Bill Clinton's plans for healthcare. And when they heard an English voice at the end of the phone, you would sometimes get these sort of people saying, oh my God, he's not going to socialise medicine, is he? And you think, you should be so lucky, you know, you were kind of wondering, I'd have to sort of bite my tongue to say, you know, if only you knew how much we are proud of our National Health Service, and we will not ever take it for granted. We have to feel proud of those principles, which are about the free at the point of use, you get the healthcare that you need whenever you need it, for whatever your condition, and we all need it at some point in our lives, and we never know when things are going to go wrong for us, but we need that health service to be there for us, and we are hugely proud of it. I think we've got to repeal the bill, those bits, those competition and fragmentation measures in the NHS bill, because of having seen it in my own constituency, where we've had services that have been contracted out to private company that offered, you know, the lowest bid. We knew they would not be able to deliver. Everybody knew, and they couldn't. And the service has had huge problems as a result. Let's stop all of that competition and fragmentation. Let's go back to the principles of the National Health Service. It's got to move forward in terms of working with social care. So if we don't have much better integration with social care, I know that actually you've done all kinds of things in the Southwest that are about better ways of partnering health and social care. So it doesn't stand still, but those principles are immensely important, and we should campaign strongly against any approach by the Tories to privatise bits in that way, or to change the funding in a way that will damage those core principles, and all of us be prepared to stand up for the health service as well.
Okay, moving to my right, it's you.
I'm from Pontefract.
Hello.
And I've called for you a few times in the past. I like to go back home as often as I can, and I find rail network is privatised is an absolute abomination and expensive as well. Do you have any support for nationalising railways?
Ian Wilshaw, Stonehouse, Royal Marines. However, this party is a great party, and it stands for social injustice, as we all know. We don't tolerate social injustice in any form. I think the four leadership contenders and four deputy leadership contenders are not bigger than this party. I think after this election, we're going to have a problem with unity. What is your solution, Yvette, for unifying this party so it comes back to being the great party that it is, that stands for social injustice and does not tolerate social injustice?